Hello, humanoids, and welcome to Atocalypse Tomorrow. The first segment, the first arc covering for Apocalypse Tomorrow. I'm, of course, joined by Seamus joined by Seamus Dack, Justin Vijay, and Joel Enns. How are you guys doing?
Super offended. Doing just good.
Offended?
Oh, yeah, no. screwed up my name right off the rip.
How are you doing?
I am doing pretty good. I'm looking forward to this episode a lot. I'm excited to kind of just hang out with you guys and talk about the show, which is pretty much what we do when we aren't recording anyways. I think it'll be fun. We have fans, if you can call them that.
I do not believe
can't be true.
And I have a whole freaking like 2 pages worth of questions here that we got in
size 72 font or
no size 11 Arial.
Triple spaced.
Yeah, quadruple spaced.
No. Okay, there is a little extra spacing just for readability, but that's for my own notes. Are you guys nervous? Are you guys worried about questions that you like can't answer or don't have a good answer for and feel like you have to make something up? Seamus is shaking his head. No, he's fine.
The joys of this game is all imagination, so all my answers will also be imagination.
I'm constantly on edge recording this silly product. So yes, I'm on edge.
You're already scared. Justin?
Yep.
I'm the opposite. Whatever I say will be out in the ethos forever. This is as real as it gets.
Oh, man. Wow. We are spanning the entire the range. This is good. I wanted to honor our first question with an email from someone I do not know. Ooh. And this is what made me the most excited. We got an email from a lovely fan named Julada Pang. And whoever you are, thank you so much for writing in. Thank you so much for listening. They sent in 4 questions.
Four questions.
I only said 1.
Wait, so they actually listened to the whole thing?
Holy moly. Okay.
Apparently, so they sent this one in between episode 3 and 4. So episode 4 hadn't dropped yet. Julada said, "Hey, just want to say big fan of the pod. I have a few questions. Number 1, how come you guys don't use luck when you roll poorly?" This one was kind of amended, I suppose, in episode 4, where you guys now have, I kind of waived it by saying you now have luck, because it was literally something I forgot. I forgot about that mechanic and explaining it. And I remembered, I think, right after episode 2 went up. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's this whole mechanic that we haven't used. And I forgot to even talk about it when we were like prepping for the show and everything. And so I said, now that you've done your first big mission, big mystery, you can have luck now.
You've earned this luck. Here you
go. We've unlocked luck.
Exactly. Woo! Yeah. Have any of you guys used luck yet?
No. And actually,
I still don't know how it works or what it is.
So, from my understanding, it's like you use auto success, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I have thought about why I haven't used it, and I was kind of talking about this before. I kind of enjoy failing because it's usually like we're trying to like fail upwards. So I enjoy how the story reacts to our failures. That was a life or death scenario. Maybe I would consider using luck, but haven't really felt that worried yet.
Joel's like, no.
You know, the structure of this show is such that who needs luck? Who needs it, right? You know, you said we fail upwards. I would disagree. I think we fail kind of laterally, if anything. Like, I knew about luck in the early, like, you know, in our first 2 episodes, and I thought, you know, on one of my many Snake Eyes roles, I thought, hey, you could save yourself a snake. But I thought nobody else has used luck, and I'm not going to be the first one to do it. Absolutely not.
Is that what it is? Is it now whoever, like, breaks the seal first? It's just whoever does it first loses.
I think that is an unspoken thing amongst the 3 of us, luck or not.
All of our luck is in the dice rolls. We don't need the mechanic luck to add to that. I mean, most of our luck so far is pretty bad, but...
Yeah. What about using up all your luck and becoming doomed? How fun could that be, though?
We're
then I get to, like,
doomed.
Go at you real hard. Well, yeah.
Have you seen us?
Yeah.
We almost died to a vacuum.
I feel like luck is going to be used in, like, it'll have to be either a really dire situation or, like, a killing blow where someone rolls snake eyes and they're like, no. No, I cannot have this
happen. Not today.
Not now. Not now.
I think that's a fair assessment, but I do think it will be someone else. I will not be the first to use it no matter what. So
yeah, I mean, neither.
Now I'm just going to start putting you guys in so much shit so that one of you breaks.
You're going to kill all of our characters and you're going to have nowhere to go.
We're going to restart the whole thing because we're all going to be dead.
We're all going to die with seven points of luck.
You guys have kind of, I don't know what the stats are. I think it would be cool. I should go back and do a little stat sheet whenever the wiki comes out for this podcast, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But like, you guys have rolled poorly in general, I feel like. And actually, that's Gelada's second question is, would you like us to send you loaded dice since you roll so poorly?
Holy shots,
that's too
fired.
Good.
Okay. I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Are you sure this is a fan?
Good question. I don't know.
Oh, man.
No, it works out because that means we just level up faster.
The grind.
To be fair, that is an element to it. You do get rewarded.
Yeah.
We hit level like 3 or 4 before we even left the yard.
Yeah, you guys talked about that in the last episode where you're like, I'm just grinded. I want to keep low stats in one thing so that I would keep trying that and keep leveling up and whatever.
I mean, you get rewarded for failure in this system, so I don't know. Success is temporary, levels are forever, so.
I mean, technically, like, we're not rolling online. Sorry, I wasn't even listening to you. I was actually thinking of the next thing I was going to say, so.
Let's sit down and talk about our campaign so far. I'm not going to listen to a word you say, but we'll talk about it.
No. I'm trying to do a natural flow of things, you know? But then when Justin says something stupid and I don't react to it, then I look stupid.
I didn't say anything stupid. Yeah. I said it's smart. Yeah.
Hold on.
I said some wisdom there.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You'll have to hear it in post now because I'm not going to repeat it. But
you'll have to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, you have to guess what I said. No, not that far.
So we don't roll online. So technically, you guys could be fudging your dice rolls. I don't see what you roll. I think you're all rolling with physical dice.
Yep.
I don't.
Justin does it.
I'm beyond that.
But it's not a public.
Justin's rolling with imaginary dice in his head.
I'm just picking numbers.
He just picks a number
between 1 and 6.
It's crazy when he gets 1, because I'm like, you're rolling 2d6, Justin.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We could be fudging our numbers, but if we were, would we fudge them that badly?
Yeah.
That's true. Unless you're, like, true comedic geniuses, right?
Well, I mean,
just we are.
Looking for those.
Yeah, you said it.
But. Sorry. Yeah.
No. Oh, sorry. What'd you say?
Next question.
Also, I do want loaded dice. Definitely.
That would be fun.
Like,
that
for
would be nice.
Actually. Different games. Can hustle all my friends.
Yeah. For gambling
dice.
Okay. This is actually, this is Gelada's third question, but also kind of half now just a business meeting. So Gelada has suggested loaded dice. And then their third question, how come no Patreon? Which is a compliment in and of itself that someone would pay for this content, but do we need to set up like a PO box for people to send like mail to and set up like a Patreon and a whole thing? What would we even put on it?
That's my first question. Like, I'm curious to know what they want on a, like, I know a lot of podcasts do like early access,
yeah,
but I feel like ours pretty much come out as soon as they're ready, so
or they just talk about the episode they just recorded kind of thing.
So, like, a little breakdown.
Everyone gets like the episodes, but only the Patreon people get like the behind the scenes talking about the episode right after or something.
We can do full unedited director's cuts of the podcast.
No.
No. That'd be bad.
No, and there's reasons for that. There are reasons. There are many. There are many reasons for that.
None of them legal, I'm sure.
All of them legal. Yeah. Just, it shows how many takes I do of things I need to I'm gonna get that clean.
We're gonna have to go back and re-record that whole
Well, it's like the first time Nick talked about doing the Talkalypse Tomorrow when he got it wrong.
I did. I fixed it.
Remember that?
I was listening to the episode for editing, and we got right into it, and the first thing I texted him was like, you did not get it, my friend.
But it's fixed now. So if people go back and listen to the episode, it's the fixed version.
Maybe I'm lying. You'll never know.
For like Patreon question, back to the actual question. I think it's like maybe wait until we have like a bit of a library of content and like more stuff that we could provide. It would be my thought on that. And then maybe we could consider it. Just because this is like a hobby right now. A little bit of inconsistencies right now. We're still figuring it out. At least I am. So... yeah, when we get more consistent, then we can think about that.
You know what maybe we should do is we should lock the old PHG YouTube videos, and then we can release those as Patreon bonuses.
I don't know if that counts as a reward.
Yeah, the Patreon content has to be a good thing that people are paying for.
We need to find a way so that if you're not a Patreon subscriber, you have to watch the PHG videos.
There we go.
Incentive.
I mean, yeah, like doing a Patreon would be cool in the sense to make money off of the show, because it does cost money to make. Like there are RSS fees for hosting the podcast for the year and things like that, but it's not too crazy. And then all the editing is done by Joel and I, so you know, we're not outsourcing that or adding extra cost there. But like, all time, I'm looking right now at our all time views, listens, downloads, streams. I don't know. We're at 291. So, like, we're not even at 300.
I mean, it's not bad for four episodes.
It's not bad. It's not bad. We do have people listening from around the world, though. I don't know if I've told you guys this. It gives me a geological, geographical map.
There you go.
Knew which map.
It's a world. It shows me where people listen in the world.
Oh, Nick and maps. What a good time.
Look, there's one up in Russia.
He's saying look, but we can't see the screen.
Yeah.
I know.
Everybody look.
Now that's good radio. We've got,
to all you listeners out there, look at this.
Some Australian listeners. We've got some African listeners, like South American.
Now,
it's literally
I don't
want to
burst your bubble or anything, but could it also be because they're on... VPN.
Oh, 100%. Yes. And that brings us to our sponsor. Yeah, who knows? Who knows, really? But I do think that
cool
we
if it was,
have
though.
People listening around the world. And, you know, it's not that many people, and that's fine. But all that to say, doing a Patreon would be cool, and I think it would be very fun. I don't know exactly what it would all be.
Yeah, I think kind of what Jess said, we give it a little more time, and then that could be something, because right now we don't have a whole lot to offer on a Patreon.
Well, here's the deal, Julotta. If you can get 9 friends to also listen to this here podcast, hey, that increases the chances of a Patreon. I've got some terrible ideas in the backlog we can put forward. Like, they're going to be bad, but it's something.
Hear me out. We actually make a Turbo Roomba and raffle it off in the Patreon.
I'm already designing it.
Yeah, of course you are.
We could do an engineering Turbo Roomba stream. Yeah. We can bring back Pentahouse Plays. We can start gaming streams again. Oh, with
the thing is, we have to do like zombie survival games.
No, it can be whatever we want. It's about us. Who knows? That would be fun, though. I think it would be cool. But
100%.
Maybe one day.
Just spread the word first.
Not a word of a lie, since we recorded, I guess it was episode 2, which was the Roomba episode, if I'm not mistaken, I have gotten nothing but Roomba ads on my phone. Like, I'm talking 75% of the ads on my phone in every, like, any game I play, even YouTube, it's like, hey, have you seen this new Roomba? And I'm like, guys, yeah, I have seen it.
Trust me, I'm looking at them.
Your phone's not listening. Don't worry. It's all safe.
They're talking about, like, superior suction. And I'm like, does it pull floorboards up, though? Does it?
Is it an Eldritch Horror, or...
Does it survive off the tears of children? We don't know.
If it isn't, I don't want it.
This one empties into a dock, so you can just clean out the dock and the Roomba can keep going. And I'm like, but what if it just went into a different dimension and we didn't have to worry about it anymore?
What if it emptied into the hells?
Exactly. Perfect. I'm so far ahead of you, Amazon, it's not even funny.
The last question from Gelada. Why specifically did you go with Monster of the Week? And this is a pretty big question. Why choose this game system? I wanted to do Monster of the Week after listening to the Adventure Zone Amnesty, which is a great podcast. And that was their, I believe, their second full campaign, Joel?
Yeah, it's a fantastic season.
Really great season. And I just like the mechanics of it. I also like the shows it was based off of, you know, the whole Supernatural and Buffy and these, like, weekly scenarios that you get into with a new monster every time, and it's fun to look forward to what's coming next. And it just had more of a, I feel like, I think an audio-friendly flow as well. Even D&D can get, like, really bogged down when you're playing it in person with, like, full maps and everything. Sometimes, I don't know, that momentum can be lost. And I listen to a lot of D&D podcasts, a lot of them. And I tune out most of the fights, even if they're like story relevant, I just kind of start to not listen as much. And I wanted this to be something interesting and fun for you guys as well, and something different, because we're really used to D&D and playing it, and we're all pretty familiar with the 5e system. Yeah, something new, and put it in a kind of weird, like, world, I guess. What do you guys think of Monster of the Week overall, like the system in general?
I'm personally a pretty big fan of it. Like you said, you know, most of us are used to playing D&D 5e and things like that. And I love rolling a bunch of dice, and I love crunching all the numbers. But it was interesting to me to play something narrative-driven, something that you kind of just say what you want to do, and the dice gets a little more... You can do crazier stuff with just the 2d6. There's less numbers to worry about and things like that. So... I've really enjoyed the difference between playing something like D&D, where you're a little more regimented, a little more, you know, specialized in terms of what kind of skills you can do, to this, where you can basically make up whatever you want. And I think all three of us have done that on a few occasions. And it creates a unique narrative that I think D&D has a little trouble doing.
Yeah, for sure.
At first, I didn't like it, and then I found out the luck system exists, and now I'm a really big
okay,
fan.
Okay. You've hated it this whole time.
No, I mean, I'll just echo the same thoughts. I mean, I think we've all DM'd now. There's a lot of preparation that goes into this, and I'm sure there's a lot that goes into Monster of the Week, probably more so than in just our home games of D&D, but I think it's kind of a nice departure from... Again, a more regimented style of playing a role-playing game of the dice kind of dictating what you do, and more so it's really more of a imagination theater kind of thing, where you kind of think of what you want to do and the dice tell you if it happens or not really at the end of the day. So it's been nice to have a bit of a mix-up instead of playing the same game over and over. So,
Yeah. Every new D&D player, when they like have their first encounter... Right? They're like, okay, I want to do this and this and this, right? And you're like, okay, cool. So we're going to start with an attack roll, right? And whatever, right? And it's like, it kind of halts that idea of, I want to do this thing, right? It immediately is like, no, you use your weapon. That's how you fight. Or you use your monk abilities or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like with Monster of the Week, it's like, oh, you want to do that? Well, that's not an attack roll. But you're doing something really intense. That's acting under pressure. Give me that role, right? And it can still do damage, and it can still affect the story where like D&D is like combat is combat. Everything outside of that is like pretty removed, I feel like. I don't know.
I think it was like tricky at first because it's more about like disassembling your brain from that D&D. Okay, so now we're in combat. Okay, whose turn is it kind of thing? So yeah, it took like an episode for me to get used to it, but yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun.
It's fun. It's a lot simpler version of what we're used to, and it's, but yeah, it's like what Justin said and what Joel said. It just allows you to just kind of do whatever you really want, and even if you roll bad, for the most part, you still do it. It's just to the extent in which you do it, and whether or not other things happen at the same time.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is like failures aren't like, no, you just don't.
Yeah, there's no hard DCs to hit or anything like that. It's just like, oh, well, you didn't roll great, so you're gonna do it, but you're not gonna do it great.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to be in a different scenario, which kind of now forces you to think, okay, now what do I do, right? Like, it's very progressive. It moves quicker, I feel like.
Nick, I was going to ask, you know, for you being the game master of sorts, you know, when it comes to D&D, you know, it's like, oh, you didn't hit the DC, this happens, you know, this ability takes place, or you take half damage, or things like that. And I can only imagine it's a really big paradigm shift for you to get from, you know, the rules of D&D where, you know, there's numbers to hit and things like that, and instead transfer over to something that says you get it done but bad stuff happens. And I'll say, from how we've played so far, I've loved the different twists and turns you've thrown at us, from, you know, mixed successes and things like that. How is that for you when you don't have nearly as much literature, in a sense, to go off of?
I think Griffin talked about it in one of their TTAS episodes, where mixed successes are just the hardest.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, how do I make what they do kind of do a thing, but then also they fail? And how is it not just the monster attacks them and they kind of fall down again? You know, it's like, right. It's been hard to come up with, like, and they also just claw at you for one damage.
Yeah.
You know, kind of things. So it's been an exercise to think of crazy things. Do they trip over something? Is there another door you didn't realize? Is, right? You can think of anything, and it just changes the scenario enough to be mixed. But it's been fun to come up with different kind of scenarios of progression and obstacles you guys have to overcome without just thinking in terms of damage and success linearly, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you ever read those Goosebumps books by R.L. Stein, like the Yes. Choose Your Own Adventure ones?
Yeah.
That's what this is reminding me of like the whole time. Because like there's
Yeah.
a bit more like that, more it's like, I don't know. It's been banging in the back of my head, like, what is this reminding me of? And it's just when I was a kid, like choosing, like, you go to the bottom of the page, okay, if they do this, you go to page 57, page 89 for this thing, kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's that randomness that anything could be around the corner, and any role you make could, like, make a hard pivot. I think that's what feels so kind of, like, fun and interesting about it.
It's like coming down the stairs and immediately seeing a ladder going up.
Okay, the ladder.
The up ladder.
You have not let go of this stupid ladder.
That's because it's
because
funny.
I forgot you were just underground. That's
the up ladder.
This is another aspect of it that when we actually started recording, so I had a plan. I had like episode one, this monster, and you guys were going to do the whole thing, right? The whole mystery.
First mistake.
And then episode two, different monster, right? And it started to just take a little longer than I expected, which was fine. But actually what that forced me to do was literally combine episodes. So I had like a episode list of kind of just ideas for what I wanted to do loosely. And essentially, like The Puppeteer was a combination of like that whole graveyard scene and whatever. That was pretty much all The Puppeteer was originally going to encompass, like within terms of like area you guys had explored. And then the next episode was going to be the Church of Scientology, and there's going to be something else involved there. And so what it actually made me do was combine those ideas, change the monster to work in that setting and kind of make it all kind of work into one story, which was way better because it cut out extra stuff that would have been boring and not as interesting to listen to. And now there's all these like crazy questions about why is this skeleton in the basement of the Church of Scientology in this summoning room? And what?
Because he wasn't supposed to be there originally. Now we know. Thanks.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No, there was literally after episode one, I rewrote everything. I just went like, okay. Yeah.
Players never do what the GM wants or desires.
Of course.
But
not.
It makes it different.
We couldn't even get out of our own home, which I feel like put a stop to some of the narrative momentum that you had planned anyways.
That's where I knew. I was like, oh, we're still dealing with the ones inside the fence. Okay. We're going to be here for a little longer than I expected. But that gives opportunities in and of itself. I think it's worked out great. I don't know.
I think it's been awesome.
Yeah, it's been great.
You know who thinks it's been working out great?
Who's
our
that?
Next email from Solomon Schlegel himself.
Oh.
He gets a special shout out and he gets an email sent in.
Why, did he send us money or what?
Lovely to hear from you.
First Patreon subscriber?
He better be, honestly. Solomon asked about Monster of the Week and why it stood out. We talked about that a little bit. First question from Sol. Forgive me for forgetting, but how long has the zombie infestation been around? In episode 3, it sounds like Dr. Loomis operates on patient zero of this zombie virus. If this is the case, has the zombie infestation spread worldwide? Is this something our adventurers are aware of? I can answer a little bit of that. It's 50 or so-ish years since the initial outbreak. Now, I need to put a trailer up because I think it's only in the description on Spotify. No, the trailer is not up. I just showed the trailer to you guys to get you excited enough to play with me.
I thought it was at the beginning of the first episode.
No. It starts with you running through the woods.
That's all the trailer you need.
I think Poppy Giles does mention that it's been about 50 or so years in the first episode narration. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. But it's been around that amount of time. Now, Dr. Loomis, in your little flashback, Solomon says, quote, patient zero of this zombie virus. Now, I don't know if that is technically correct. That may or may not be an assumption.
Right. I believe I was at a slightly more rural clinic, kind of in a township of some variety. Not in a large city. So I'm betting just from your what you've told us and the flashback that Jacob had, that he came across this more rural case of it. And I think from there, it probably spiraled out of control in that area. But I really don't know as to where the rest of the world was kind of at that point. I'd figure that if I was getting a case in a rural town, that the cities must be dealing with it in a, you know, an exponential capacity. Shortly after Jacob came across this first case, it wasn't too long before he kind of separated himself a little bit because he figured that things could go poorly. And so as soon as it started showing up, I think he probably started to plan to kind of get away from it all.
That makes sense. Dr. Jacob is obscurely old.
he's an elderly gentleman.
He's both 60 and 150 at the same time.
Yeah, you have to be old enough to become a doctor. The earliest you can do that is like 22.
Well, to be a cultist as well, like that probably takes a couple of years as well.
He wasn't a cultist. He wasn't a cultist. He's just a gentleman with a certain set of skills.
We don't have to call him it. Sure, titles are just titles.
To kind of answer that sub question, has the zombie infestation spread worldwide? I imagine it to be so.
You don't know?
I would agree.
I mean, it's your world. You can just make it so if you want.
So, well, this harkens back to the trailer. Is the idea was climate change just got out of control. And so the weather got wacky, right? Like crazy. That happened. Everything kind of went into chaos. Along with that,
the ice caps melted and there was some kind of virus deep within, hidden there dormant long ago. I need to release this trailer on the, I'll do that right after we.
Right up on the Patreon.
The lore.
You want to know what the hell's going on? Pay for it.
It's behind a paywall.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just gibberish.
You can either read the synopsis or pay to hear it.
That's right. And some kind of virus was released in all of this, and it infected the animals first and then humans. That's kind of all that. And then the world collapsed, and we're about 50-ish kind of years after-ish that. Around.
Yeah.
Rough estimate. So if the climate control or the climate went all out of whack and then the ice caps melted, then the zombie apocalypse started, it's probably a safe bet a lot of people were already dead before the zombie apocalypse started.
Yeah.
Like a good chunk of the world.
Yeah, it would have been a drastic decline.
There would have been a lot more beachfront property, though.
Mm-hmm. New property beachfront value through the property. Roof. No neighbors. Right?
Joel, you're alluding to a question that's coming up later on.
No way.
Yes, but Saul still is wondering about the puppeteer. In episode 3, the boss fight, they were taken down quite easily. Okay.
Boss fight.
Are you concerned about your player's ability to roll poorly, leading to them becoming over-leveled for the enemies you plan for them to face?
He's giving away our secrets.
Wait a minute. Uh-oh.
The short answer is no. I'm completely prepared for these bozos. Let me tell you, after the puppeteer just frickin' died, because Jungo stabbed him.
He got walloped.
He got forked.
He got forked.
The second monster got buffed in that instant.
Guess what? The second monster is still weak to the fork.
Yes.
Which is the coolest part.
Everything is weak to the fork, baby.
But good luck getting there, baby.
Yeah, you made him out of
metal? To be fair, you also gave my fork the power of the Mjolnir. You let it come back to you, so I can just throw that bad boy up.
And you gave him a pigeon.
And you gave me the pigeon.
Okay, the pigeon is one thing, but no, the fork was just that one moment because it was cool and it became your fork.
Well, you know what they say about flavor.
No. Do you have a move that says you have force powers?
Yeah.
Well, kinda.
It's just in his stat sheet, just the basic stats.
Well, let me just
He's a god.
Let me just take a quick gander.
How did you guys feel during that fight and then when it ended?
I think I had maybe a similar reaction to Saul. Was like, oh, wait, that's it? Because he just died.
We got him.
Yeah. Like, leading up to it, I was like a little nervous, a little excited. And then after when I found out that was the boss, I was like, oh.
I thought he was going to do something with the skeletons in the room or something. Or like just like reanimate. Maybe he did. I don't remember now.
Yeah, it would have been a good idea.
Yeah, his name was the puppeteer, Nick. Taking but notes. We didn't see any sort of puppets.
This is a workshop for his next monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, Joel. Wait a minute.
That's a great point, Joel. I'll pull this up here.
His name is the puppeteer, not the good puppeteer.
So, okay. The puppeteer had a really cool ability.
Sure.
Dying in a corner?
Monsters have moves as well that they can use. One of the puppeteer's moves, which was going to be really cool and scary, that it never got to use once, was bringing zombies that you had killed back to life.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Hold on. He used it once in the first episode.
That's right. The zombie that you killed when you went back was not there anymore.
Oh.
So he was like recharging his ability or something. That's why we got him so easily.
Yeah.
He had to recharge out of batteries.
When you faced him, he was never around any dead bodies to use it on. And I did not expect him to die there that quick either. So
no one expects to die
was
in an
ready
office
for
like that.
A whole bunch of bodies. But
see, I feel like the goal was for us to fight him in Eden.
See, I thought that too.
Where there was a bunch of dead bodies all laying about, conveniently placed for his use.
Yeah. Yes, that was the original plan. You are correct. Yes. The original goal was to fight him in Eden.
That's why we didn't go to Eden.
Well, he shouldn't have stepped to us.
Yeah. Sure. I know.
He should have waited there like a good boss. Yeah. For the monologue when we got there.
Let us go through the fog wall and then we'll kill him.
It's called a boss room for a reason. Okay.
So if you would have killed him in that moment, like I thought you would have, without the weakness that I didn't know or prepare for Justin Jungo having, the bones would have fallen apart to dust and essentially reformed back in the coffin. And when you went in there, it would have risen up.
That coffin that you were like looking into for like forever?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
That thing we thought was there was going to be so much more to do with it, and then...
There was. There wasn't. Just
well, yeah.
Didn't apply there was, in that situation.
Yeah. It was too late.
So, Joel, do you remember we were talking about some of the weaknesses?
Yeah.
And you had a guess.
Yeah.
For one of them.
Okay.
Do you remember?
No.
Is it salt?
So, you found... It was the cause of death, drowned.
That's why you gave us tubes of liquid.
There you go.
The piss jars?
The piss jars. Yeah. The big mega piss jars.
The room of piss jars.
Ah, right, of course. My only weakness.
Piss?
Piss jars.
No.
Why do people...
If someone dumped a piss jar on me, I'd probably want to die too.
Yeah, that's true. Fair.
That's fair. Yeah.
It's
especially old piss like that. Like, nice.
Yeah, but if you would have used water in some capacity, it would have been a weakness enough to destroy it as well. The other weakness it had was you could kill it and then destroy the bones before it like reformed.
So you didn't have cutlery on that list?
No.
Copper fork was missed.
Yes.
Next time.
Yeah. So it had, it was cool, right? It was pretty cool.
It was
cool.
Awesome. It was fun.
Just remember, on every enemy, just on weakness listing, just make sure you add another little dash and copper fork beside.
Yeah, silverware off the table.
Yeah.
You know what we should do next time is we should put the fork in the gun.
Oh, a blunderbuss.
Shoot the fork at somebody.
A blunderbuss situation.
Give the fork to the pigeon in its talons.
Homing pigeon with a fork. Everybody's weakness.
To be fair, I'm not sure a lot of people can withstand that.
Oh, the pigeons, the snakes.
It's the bird hole freaking zoo.
Yeah. Saul actually asks, snakes play a heavy role in Apocalypse Tomorrow.
Yep.
Not anymore.
That's fair.
Not at home.
When someone rolls snake eyes, is it always the same type of snake that attaches to their face? It's also,
the same snake.
Does the type of snake change depending on the geographical location the character is in? Garter snakes are some of the most common snakes in South Canada. If this adventure took place in the Amazon rainforest, would rolling snake eyes be more detrimental due to lethality of snakes from that region? Wow.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
Uh-oh.
Anacondas.
Just getting absolutely wrapped up by a boa constrictor after you roll snake eyes.
Well, then we might use the luck. We might use the luck then. Who knows? Maybe that'll be our first luck roll.
That's what I need. Bigger snakes to attach to
your face. There you go. Perfect. Thanks, Saul.
Saul, I like to think that they are different snakes and that all of them are out to get these characters. All different varieties.
The hive mind of snakes.
I would say that they would probably be of similar type to what we know geographically now. However, with, you know, the flora and fauna kind of coming back with a vengeance after all of this crazy weather and reclaiming the planet, I think there's been some weird snakes out there a little bit, for sure. Maybe that's why they're so ferocious. Who knows?
They're just ornery.
This man.
Future Nick here. As I was editing, we all took a little bio break here, and Joel recorded a little message that I didn't know about, so I'm going to play that here.
Well, hey there, listeners. It's been just an absolute pleasure. I'm pleasantly surprised and overwhelmed by the idea that people that don't know us four goofs are actually listening to this podcast on purpose. So thank you. It's been a hoot recording it. We do it just for funsies, and thanks for listening.
Before we get to Saul's last question, I think, Justin, you had one which was for each of the players. What kind of design focus, motif, or theme did you want for your character to explore when you were creating them? Which I think is a great question. And I'm going to turn that right back on you, Justin. What what kind of design focus, motif, theme were you thinking of when creating Jungo?
Legitimately, what people might not know about me is I like to play characters who are deceivers and liars and just deceptive characters in general. So I wanted to essentially play an innocent in a world of violence, because usually I'm the one putting the players through that. So I was doing a bit of role reversal here. So that was the whole thing. I want him to know nothing. I want him to be good. I don't want him to lie really yet.
Yeah.
We'll see if I can keep that train of thought the whole way through. But yeah, that was legitimately the reason why I made Jungo how he is. So
I mean, he lied in the first episode about the sweet potatoes.
Yeah, well, it's a white lie.
He's learning the difference about white lies and true lies.
Yeah, the idea is essentially how this character ends up in Jungo will be completely off of nurture, because he's like a newborn babe. So if he ends up a bad guy, it's the world's and his friend's fault.
Hooray.
Yay.
It really does feel like that. It feels like he's thrown into this world as an adult, not knowing what is normal, what is acceptable. And in a world that's already so crazy, he's trying to sort all that out. It's been very cool to see you kind of play against
every fiber of my being.
Yeah, yeah. It's been fun, because like what you do so well when you're running a game or DMing is like making these super enticing devils and demons and things that make you want to make deals with them, and you make it sound so good and so sweet. And now you're playing this innocent, wonderful character who actually just recently spoke with a voice. How did you feel about that interaction?
So as a player, I love that kind of stuff, personally. As Jungo, I think he's a little alarmed, but it's more one of those things where there is that innocence to him, but I think inherent to everybody there is like that want to seek purpose. So maybe that's kind of something that's tying into that for him, is this the pursuit of purpose. So I think that's kind of his thought process right now.
I love that. Jungo's so fun. He's so you always have such like perfect little lines or places where you just make him oblivious that are so hilarious, and like just perfect little buttons on the end of scenes and things like that. It's so good.
Oh, I'm just going with my good buddies. They set it up for me very easily. So,
Seamus, what about what did you think about when building Colton?
Well, contrary to what Justin did, I went with the exact same motif I do for every character, where they have no family and wander around alone.
Perfect.
And that's pretty much as far as I got, because I made the character about 5 minutes before we started recording the first session.
You son of a bitch. You had so much time.
And I totally forgot that I was like, oh, man, I gotta make a character. Oh, crap. What was I supposed to do? It's a monster. Half zombie. Sounds cool.
That's what a session zero is for.
Yeah.
We had a session zero.
Yeah,
exactly.
And we decided which classes we were going to use. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing
that. And that didn't spur on any kind of creativity.
At that point, I had, as far as I had at the end of session zero, was he's going to be partially taken over by a zombie disease. And then that was as far as it got until we started recording.
The mystique gone.
So it's been super fun learning about the character with you guys.
Hey, that's also an experience.
I could completely
for sure.
Play it off the cuff just out of nowhere, just whenever they ask me something about the character, I'm like, like when we had that flashback, you're like, what was he doing beforehand? I'm like,
he's panicking. You're panicking on the inside.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, there was beforehand? Oh, shit.
Well, that was also like, I think I might have messaged you beforehand. I don't know, but I think I
would. No.
No? Okay. I knew I was going to do flashbacks, and I just didn't know. I didn't know what Colton was up to, so I was genuinely curious. And then you came up with that, and it was great. And
the only heads up I had that there might be a flashback for me was that I was the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a little time to prepare.
The other two got flashbacks. Okay, well, he's not going to do them and not me, so I got to come up with something.
The idea mill is just spinning in Seamus's head.
What was he doing? Wandering around alone.
You can call it whatever, preparing your character 2 minutes before and doing it off the cuff and whatever. And that's fair. But I feel like you've been playing Colton consistent. Like, he feels like a consistent character to me. I feel like you're not just doing random things. You're doing things in character of him, even if you don't know entirely. And then that's what these tabletop games do, are create scenarios that you just make up and roll with, right? And yeah, it's not mysterious and whatever, but that's what writer's rooms are before you get to the actual, film and the story and the script. It's people throwing around ideas until they like something, and we just have to do it in one. That's it. That's kind of the only difference.
Well, it's cool with this, because with D&D characters, and you guys know, I've spent 4 months making a character, writing a backstory. It's got 7 pages of backstory. I have its whole life planned out and everything, but that's only good for the first session for the most part. And after that, everything starts just unraveling itself, or things change. You meet different people, you got to change stuff. So with this, there was nothing to start, and it's just whatever comes, I just go with it and see where it takes me. And so far, it's been good. It's been fun.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think you're going to do that for more characters, no. D&D or otherwise going forward? No.
No, D&D, absolutely not. I already have my next three characters planned out. For Monster of the Week, maybe, just because it's more of a very imagination-based, it's a little easier for me to just fall into a character and just kind of
roll with it,
make it as it comes. But for D&D and stuff like that, it's no, those are planned out, spreadsheet, backstory, world build around it.
Joel, Dr. Loomis, his design focus, his motif, his theme.
Dr. Loomis started out pretty rough. But something I wanted to do was I wanted to be the healer for the group. I thought, hey, it'd be cool to have an old dude who, learned his trade back in the old world and, had a calm demeanor and was sensible and rational and could kind of be an anchoring point for the two of those two. And then that quickly changed and he turned into this senile mess of a brain kind of individual. Both of the other people I was playing with could heal far more effectively than I could do for them. So the whole idea of me being a healer was out the window, just gone. And I thought, well, okay, whatever. That's fine. That's fine. They can heal themselves and me better than I can heal anybody. And then I think he was kind of up in the air. I wasn't exactly sure where I wanted him. And then you started bringing out stuff like the Turbo Roomba. And I think that's when he kind of found his spot as this just really strange fellow who may not have all been there and who I think gave in to the apocalypse a little bit once he abandoned traditional science and things like that. He became a bit more of a wild card, but it was way more fun to play.
Right.
Especially since I have this naive partner in Jungo to bounce things off of. It allowed me to delve a little bit more into the insanity that has been, the past 5 decades or what have you. And for better or for worse, that's where he's ended up. He wasn't originally supposed to be a bit of a mad scientist, but that's kind of what he ended up as. And I think,
yeah,
I think at this point in the story, he's just happy to have somebody to talk to.
We've got this found family now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He's been alone for a long time. And I think he was kind of content being alone, even though maybe it wasn't the healthiest for him. But then these other people showed up, and all of a sudden some of the weird information that has been in his head for however many years actually became useful because somebody else was there to learn from it. And it wasn't just him by himself. And honestly, he's gotten way stranger than I would have thought. The guy's a real loony.
I feel like episode two, like not only the turbo Roomba whole thing, but that it might have just been the catalyst to the
yeah.
The turbo Roomba, I think, sticks in people's minds and ours and the Google ads because what it did is it formed you three. I feel like that kind of scenario, that situation where you just dealt with something insane together, the three of you, it like solidified each of you as a character and kind of the dynamic moving forward. And it was just perfect. It was so organic and fun. And like the scenario is so stupid, but you guys like actually made so many great character choices and decisions in those moments that I feel like that was just kind of like a really solidifying point. All of a sudden, Dr. Loomis was this person now.
Yeah, I think, and I have to thank you two boys for that, because I didn't expect the Turbo Roomba to be anything serious.
Tell me about it.
But listening back on episode two, and it's just Colton and Jungo pushing and pushing and wanting more information. And I could feel, as we were recording it, I could feel the manic energy of Dr. Jacob in my head, like starting to get squirrely and starting to unlock doors and pathways in his mind that have been sealed for an eternity. And it was like,
Colton trying to be so logical. He's like, wait, what? Why would you do this?
Yeah, and Jacob having truly no answers for the poor boy, right? And just like, I don't know. I don't know. It's happened. This is where we are. Live with it. You know, I think that became kind of a paradigm shift for that for Jacob, and he went from his original scope of a bit of a bumbling professor, bumbling doctor, you know, was calm and collected, to a true lunatic.
Yeah, it felt like we got to know the real him, you know?
Yeah, it unlocked a door.
So, Nick, when you were crafting the character of Nicholas, what were kind of the elements there?
I was actually hoping we wouldn't talk about this because none of the questions addressed it.
Yeah,
Nicholas Frizz's ends.
Good luck.
Okay, you know what? We'll come back to that because I do want to finish off Saul's email. And not to pick on Joel specifically, but there were actually specific Dr. Loomis questions.
Oh.
The last one from Saul. Thank you so much for your email, Saul. Dr. Loomis has a handgun with a Doug Dimmadome-esque barrel that is referenced throughout the show.
That's a fact, yeah.
This is a 44, right? Your 44 mag?
Yeah.
How does Dr. Loomis hold such a gun? Someone of his age likely would have some form of arthritis, and a gun of this description would likely be very front-heavy, requiring a lot of wrist strength to use effectively.
Right.
Now, right. Solomon, you're taking that a little literally, but let's talk about the gun. Let's talk about...
He holds it sideways, like anybody.
Like disperses the weight.
Yeah. It releases
the torsion. It's easier on the wrist that way. It's more of a natural hold.
And then when it kicks, it's just like a flex.
So my thought process is that he's focused on the weight of the gun, but not the fact that there's like potentially a Lovecraftian horror within the Roomba itself. That's what we're worried about, the weight of the gun.
I mean, there might be a Lovecraftian horror in the gun.
It seems that everyone has just accepted the Turbo Roomba as is.
As it should be.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Which is... strange and wonderful.
I feel like that's solely because of how Dr. Loomis reacted when the Roomba came out. And it was just so matter of fact, like, oh no, not that.
My greatest shame.
And it was just like, he just explained it perfectly. It was like, no, it was just so, that's what it is. So everyone just, it makes sense.
I do have to compliment Joel and Justin and Seamus as well. You guys have been yes-anding almost to your detriment.
Almost which certainly.
Which is...
What do you mean, dark
really
detriment?
Hilarious. It's just funny. Like, you guys keep pushing things and keep asking questions and keep taking it down these tangents, and it's so funny. I feel like that's where, like, a lot of the show actually gets its character, is just us goofing on each other and not letting me forget about the up ladder and, you know, just...
The up ladder has transcended past this show, even.
Seamus won't let me live it down that I fucked up once. Once!
Just once.
I also like that Dr. Loomis is the only one who lived in the old world, so he can really just spout nonsense to these two about what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be correct in the traditional sense. All it has to be is correct in my mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that provides some interesting...
As long as you can explain it away.
I do my best to explain absolutely anything that can happen away.
Like for Jungo, Dr. Loomis's gun, he thought all guns looked like that, so he never thought anything of it.
He hasn't seen a regular-sized pistol yet.
I feel like if this were ever turned into a comic book... Anytime the gun is out, the barrel just goes past the frame.
Past the frame.
You know, just like you never see the end of the barrel ever.
Oh.
It doesn't matter where you are in frame.
The first four panels would just be like, it'd be Loomis, and then just barrel, and then barrel, and then barrel, and then it'd go off the page.
And then the outside door.
So yeah.
And
then...
Now, there's a couple more specific questions about the doctor side of Dr. Loomis. And this is, I kid you not, a question from Dr. Emma Ball.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
I got an Atocalypse question. What the hell kind of doctor is Dr. Jacob Loomis?
Good one.
He's so squeamish. I thought he must be a doctor of engineering or a psychiatrist. He calls himself an, in quotes, architect of evolution for a Roomba, which seems like an engineering or robotics move, but then he also mentions working at what sounds like a family doctor walk-in clinic? But he's grossed out by a lot of stuff you would have to get used to in medical doctoring. How many degrees does this man have? What are his actual credentials?
You know what, Dr. Emma? Don't even step. Don't even step to Mr. Jacob. Just don't
Here's this cool character you made. Look at all the holes in the story.
keep your doctorate away from me, young lady.
She was furious. I talked to her about this.
Oh, did you?
And she was like, What does he do?
I'm a doctor.
What does he do?
He's a doctor.
Just jealous because he's got more doctor titles than she does.
Doctor, architect of evolution. I forgot about that.
I don't remember saying architect of evolution. I don't remember saying
architect
that.
Of evolution.
See, the thing is, I don't remember it, but
it
100%
it
sounds like something. Yeah. And of course, it has to do with the Roomba. Not anything to help mankind. Just, I was an architect of evolution.
Whoa,
I made this vacuum.
Hold up. It's supposed to help humankind. It just went bad.
We simply cannot talk about the Roomba more, you guys.
Yeah, we can.
Simply cannot.
Well, it's funny when you said like the Roomba really sticks in people's minds. Like, well, yeah, it's because we talked about it for about 45 minutes.
We talked about
episode.
It forever, and I was going to cut it.
You were.
And then you guys made a whole fuss about it.
Everyone I've talked to said they would have been so mad if they found out that Roomba bit existed and it wasn't in the episode.
Yeah. So, Joel, you are leaving. Your answer is he's a doctor.
He's a medical professional. He has an MD.
The full answer was
professional. There are so many levels to medical professional.
He
what are you talking about?
A medical doctorate degree. I don't know what the actual words are
okay,
for that.
Okay.
Like he's
an MD.
He's an MD. He's a
pediatrician.
He's not a pediatrician. He's not a huge fan of kids. Too slimy.
Oh.
I think he's probably got some form of virology background to him of some variety.
Oh.
But I will say, like, he knows how to perform a toe amputation like the back of his hand. So tell me, Dr. Emma, how many toe amputations have you pretended to do on a podcast?
I mean, to be fair, Dr. Loomis has done zero because I did that.
Oh, I directed you.
Okay.
I I did like the ambiguity of him calling himself a medical professional, though. That kind of makes me laugh.
Mm-mm.
I like how vague that is. He can be a whole lot of things.
So many.
He's all of them and none of them at the same time.
He's Schrodinger's medical professional.
One of my original ideas for Loomis was that he was actually a disgraced doctor. Like, was kicked out of the field, was kicked out of practice. That didn't end up going ahead.
And then went mad scientist?
Yeah, well, you know, he was into the obscure, let's say.
But Eldridge.
Yeah, that didn't end up going forward. But it was originally an idea that he was some form of poor, disgraced doctor that was just trying to make his way. Cancel all of that because he's a real doctor with a real degree.
Yeah, we have. He ND. Went to. That's what we got confirmed.
He went to the Medical School of the Caribbean.
It's one of those online ones, isn't it?
The medical school.
No. He went there.
The Medical School of the Caribbean.
The Caribbean.
Yeah. Mark it down.
Okay. And that's where he learned
doctoring.
That's
the ninth Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Dead Man's Medical School.
There is such a place. I just looked it up. There is such a place.
Yeah.
See? Caribbean confirmed. Medical School. There we go.
All right, Emma. Dr. Emma.
I don't make anything up. All of it's real.
All of it's real.
Wow. Confirmed. Amazing. Thank you so much for the question. And
thanks for listening, Emma.
Yeah, Saul had a very similar question. And he closes out his email by saying, thanks for taking the time to read my questions. Again, love the show. Can't wait for more. Cheers.
Thanks, very nice. Saul. Thanks, Emma.
We have a few more guys.
Lightning round.
Lightning round. Fire off.
These are from a certain person called Natasha. Question one. Approximately where is Jacob's cabin in relation to modern day Earth? It's a very good question. Do you guys know? Or have a guess?
My thought has always been the Wyoming area.
Where the hell's Wyoming? Give me a second. I need a map, man. I'm so bad at geography.
I don't know this.
That's always been my feeling is the
like a Midwest. I've felt Midwest as well.
Oh yeah. Seamus, you're very close.
I've always felt like Nevada, yeah. Just because it's like
Nevada.
classic zombie area. Which is just a state over from Wyoming.
Yeah, Nevada would work.
My feeling, back from the original, the first draft of the trailer kind of that you had sent out, Nick, was my picture was always like kind of Eastern California in the hills, assuming that the ocean rose quite a bit. I always felt like he was in kind of like the drier part of California, up in the hills a little way from the water. But I don't know. I had West Coast in my mind, but we haven't really specifically said. And I assume Dr. Jacob would know.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm kind of a fan of it being ambiguous.
Yeah. I don't want to set too many things in stone that aren't pertinent to the story, just because it's kind of fun and interesting to think about. But Joel, you're pretty... all of you are very close. And Joel, you're correct with like the ice caps melting and the water levels rising. Essentially, you would get those coasts to shrink, essentially. So your new coasts would be more inland. Places like Nevada or East California, Utah, Wyoming, for sure. Anywhere around there, kind of like a Midwest, which is now actually the coast of
so just the west
South
now.
Canada.
Okay.
It's just west. It's just west South Canada. There you go. Somewhere around there. That's where Jacob's cabin is, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Here's a great one. What is each character's, not humans, favorite flavor of ice cream? Junko and Colton wouldn't have had ice cream, I don't think.
I don't know. Colton said all kinds of ice cream.
Oh, really? Tell me about it.
Oh, he's tried every ice cream they carry and every gas station he's come across that was still not pilfered. And also, he followed around a lot of rating groups and would have just rated them with whatever they happen to have in their vehicles.
Specifically following ice cream trucks.
Yeah. But his favorite so far that he's tried is Rocky Road.
I was just going to say vanilla, but I think it was Smarty Blizzard. Because there's like
oh, hell yeah.
Little things going on there.
Junko would love a Smarty Blizzard.
I think so. Yeah.
I'm really trying to hone in on what Dr. Loomis would enjoy.
I'm thinking like rice pudding.
I was going to say something foul. Yeah, I'm not sure
it's
what,
probably
though.
Something that's not ice cream.
It's not ice cream.
His favorite ice cream is like a bowl of water or something.
Everyone loves a good old bowl of water.
Maybe he's a butterscotch man. You know, like a 4-liter tub butterscotch
man. Yeah.
Not any like, other amount. It has like, to be 4-liter tub.
Does butterscotch make you think of old? Because it does for me, and that's no possible.
Yeah, it does.
I think of Werther's.
Yeah. I love Werther's. Joel, you're talking like butterscotch that's been in the pantry so long that dust has collected on it from Oma and Opa's cupboard.
We call that Oma's butterscotch, yeah.
And then you drizzle it on vanilla ice cream, and you're like, this is mothball stale, and yet somehow sweet and delicious.
You can use this stuff as road tar. It's so dense.
See, when I think of butterscotch ice cream, I think of like the where it's just vanilla ice cream with the butterscotch like in it.
That's what I'm talking about.
What you pull out of the freezer, the butterscotch in it is just rock hard. Like you can't even scoop it out. But all the ice cream is good. Like,
dunk taffy.
Because it's been in there for years.
That would make sense for Dr. Loomis.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah, I think that's what he's into.
You guys, we got an email from Will, our friend Will.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey, Will.
Hey, Will.
Friend of the pod.
Hey, Will. Will asks, how do you find the inspiration to have the voice of Poppy Giles as the last bastion of radio signals be so alluring and unique in such a dark time of zombies and have him have the sickest taste in music?
Poppy Giles is my favorite character on the podcast and probably will forever be my favorite character on the podcast.
I'll never forget when he's like, let's listen to this little ditty. And it was just the hardest EDM.
From Hoot Toopic.
Right, Nick, sounds like a you question.
Yeah. Why so alluring and unique? He's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
And he's a mixture of a number of characters that I have kind of picked up and also played a little bit over the years. And he's just kind of an amalgamation of them. Like, I'm not the first one to do this, obviously, you know, right? Like, there's the Adventure Zone does a bunch of, like, preamble stuff before some other things. There are others that Dungeons and Daddies does a whole, like, skit essentially beforehand where they do like a full on like radio show or ad for this thing or whatever. And so like the idea of kind of introducing people into the podcast is not new, but it was a fun way to just kind of start off really strong. And if you're going to make it through that first 30 seconds, then you might like what's going on. And if not, then you're not going to enjoy the podcast and that's fine. So it kind of was, it was to set a tone. It was to set a tone of we can be wacky and funny and crazy even in these kind of dark and desperate times.
See, my red string theory is that Poppy Giles isn't just the only person left doing radio. He makes sure he's the only person doing radio, so he's like killing off other people who try to do radio.
Whoa. It's like the mafia?
Yeah, he's got like a monopoly on like broadcast. And then also, I feel like he might be someone from Loomis's past, and he's going to become, like, a big bad in the end.
If you try and build a radio tower, I'll slit your throat.
Yeah, that's my red string theory.
He's the character for me that makes it feel like so much like a Fallout setting. I don't know why. I've never played a whole lot of Fallout, but to me, he's kind of brings that all together with, like, the choppy radio and, like, the strange music.
Yeah, the absurdity of it.
It really is a delightful way to do exposition, in my opinion, you know, like learning about things happening in the world as well as him kind of covering things that maybe he wouldn't have an actual knowledge of happening, but it's fun for at least me, and I assume it's fun for you two guys as the player to have Poppy Giles, you know, tell us stuff, and I can only assume as the listener it's a lot of fun too. But yeah, Nick, I think you're right with the kind of the tone setting of it. You know, when we start our episodes with Poppy Giles saying that he hasn't slept in, you know, 87 hours and he's talking to his cat about aligning the satellite dishes so we can get a proper signal and things like that, it really puts us in a setting of, oh, we can just say shit. Like, we can just say stuff and it's real.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it sets a really a crisp bar for exactly kind of what we're aiming for. And honestly, it's one of my, I look forward to the Poppy Giles transmission whenever we record. I'm hoping to just catch a glimpse of that guy.
That's actually something the listeners probably don't know. I actually prepare the Poppy Giles intro for when we record, even before the episode is made, so that the players get to hear it first and kind of get to actually hear how the episode would start. They either get a little context from it or whatever, and that's why you hear them react.
Gives me big Borderland vibes too.
Yeah.
Because they had some real like crazy people in that game where like they would just come in randomly over like a speaker and you're like, what the hell is that? I get the same feeling.
Yeah, there is this trope of kind of like a crazed old person in the apocalypse, you know? And what if he just had a platform like the people do now with Twitter, you know, right? But he was the only one you could hear. He's not necessarily doing anything wrong or
that we know of.
That you know of. But he is kind of the only one you get to hear.
The only voice on the frequencies.
And I feel like it's not like if you're going through the radio and you're like scanning, it's not just like static, then him. It's just every single one is him, no matter what.
Most frequencies.
Yeah, it's like 103.1, him. 104.1, him. 107.1, him. It's like, doesn't matter where you go, it's just always him.
My mind's eye, I see, I don't even know if this is like canon, but he has a radio tower with like 30 different dishes of satellite, and they're all just a different frequency, right? He's just trying to take over as many waveforms as he can.
Take over, you say?
Maybe the three of us should start up, see if we can build a tower on the ranch and see what happens.
You could contact him.
If we really want to meet him, that's how we do it. We try and build a radio tower. He'll show up and kill us.
Show up with an army of zombies and outrun us.
And he can fight the Turbo Roomba.
He can try.
He can certainly try.
It's like Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, I'd pay to see that.
Bobby Giles versus the Roomba. Episode 6.
We're not even in it. It's just Nick playing against the Roomba.
Nick records it by himself. We just get to listen to it after.
It's just sound effects and Poppy Giles.
It's just you
voice.
Doing
That's
Poppy
it.
Giles and then Roomba sounds all by mouth.
It's insane that we came back to the Roomba, because I was actually going to skip this question because we kind of talked about it. But Will, in his email, said, when you introduced the Roomba, did you expect it to get as much traction as it did with your players?
No.
And how did it change from how you expected it to be used in the story as a storyteller for your group? Okay, the D100 list. Let's talk about this, guys.
Yes.
I know that the D100 list has come up a number of times and the absurdity of it. D100 lists that I have seen online, and I've done a lot of looking for D&D games, just general lists of 100 things that you can roll on for fun. 99% of these lists suck, and they're boring. They suck and they're boring. They don't have items or things that are interesting to the story or make the players want to make choices. They're just a thing. When I made the D100 list, it took a while because I wanted to literally go from 1 to 89 of things that like could be used, could be utilized, have multiple story ideas or inspire different things, that they're not just like one-dimensional. And that's why, like, when I explained the whole crafting thing, I was like, oh, duct tape, screws, things like that, whatever, you need to combine those things, you have that, because that's the kind of stuff that's on D100 lists, is like
a pack of nails.
Yeah, that's boring.
And duct tape
and things, and it's like, great, now I can fasten the things that I get later on, and that's not exciting or interesting at all. So I really tried to make 1 to 89 be something that could be interesting literally on its own or utilized on its own in some capacity or preferably multiple ways. That was my goal. I don't know if I 100%, you know, made that, and now you guys are going to roll something really boring and shitty on the list. But yeah, that was the idea.
And we already hit like, what, 500 feet of hose and a sprinkler?
Yeah.
Like,
it's great.
We can make anything out of anything.
I know. See? You could do lots of things with that, right? That's a thing. You can do lots of things with that.
Yeah, like self-defense.
Anyway.
Or home defense.
Exactly. Exactly. You guys rigged up a whole system. I thought it was perfect. It was great. And then the 90s, I wanted to be like dial to 11 weird, fun.
Game breaking.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wall breaking, you could say.
Somebody to that.
That's Will's third question. When the group completed the mission, did you expect to have yourself join them in the story?
Yeah, Nick.
Or was that improvised to enrich the story of an apocalypse happening after our time? Was it used to enrich the story? Technically, yes. The 90s were hard to come up with. I didn't want this to be rolled, honestly.
And we hit two of them in the first four episodes.
Yeah. I wanted a couple of them, you know? Like, my preference would be, like, over the whole thing would be, like, maybe you guys roll in the 90s twice. That would be cool.
Done.
You guys have already hit that. And they're... It's already crazy. So, I hate it.
The real question is, did you expect us to take you with us and make you our... What's the title you guys right now?
Friend?
No, he has something else now. It's like...
Buddy.
I did expect you to keep Nicholas with you.
Nicholas.
Nicholas Frizenzins.
Just because... I think you actually talked about it. You're like, we're not letting you get out of this that easy.
No.
Nope.
Absolutely not.
No, I definitely didn't expect it. What were your guys' reactions to all this?
I was blown away when Seamus guessed it before it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Seamus, you guessed it like right before. You're like, is it Nick?
Oh, I thought I'm like, there's no fucking way.
What tipped you off?
It was the way you were describing yourself
as the most average, generic
white dude. I'm like, that's how Nick talks about himself.
It's true.
I just kept thinking to your comments like years and years ago, where you're like, if you pulled up a me on Nintendo Wii and you got the most average brown-haired white guy.
Yeah.
That's me. And I was like, okay.
The default me.
This is the whole thing, okay?
Well, I think it really hit when we got the Wii U and it lets you like
take a picture.
Scan your face and they'd make a me for you. And
I honestly forgot about that. I blocked it out of my mind. Yeah. I blocked it.
Because I remember doing that and everyone's like, oh, this is so weird. And yours was just the same thing. That
That's actually why I grew long hair, Nick. It's so that I could do something different on my me generator.
Sam. It's also why I grew my hair longer.
Just so I can change my me.
Yeah. So Nicholas is there now. He's there. We'll see what happens with him.
Yeah. It would be a good opportunity to really expand your RPing skills. Because I honestly feel like RPing as a character is easier than role-playing as yourself in a made-up world.
Yeah, it's true. When I was going through the recording, I was like, I kind of switched voices. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? Why would I do that?
It's just
you. But I kind of did. It was weird.
I'm excited for us to get another lens into the old world. You know, another person that Jungo and Colton can ask about what happened, try to fact-check Dr. Loomis.
I'm just bummed that he's not coming with us to the Zombo Rombo combo.
Oh, yeah.
We could bring him.
No, he said he was staying back.
Well, what's he going to do? Resist three of us at once? No. Get in the car.
We kidnap him. Bring him to the Zombo Rombo combo.
It's a sacrifice.
That would actually be great. If you guys killed me off, that would be hilarious.
Ritual sacrifice really you?
I would actually appreciate that, I think.
You guys, action economy.
Entry fee is one human.
Well, do we got a human for you?
We got a fresh old human.
Fresh, slightly frozen.
He's thawed. He's well thawed.
Thank you, Will, for those questions.
Thanks, Will.
Yes, thank you, Will.
That actually brings us to the final question.
Oh, my dog.
And this one's from me.
Okay.
Yeah, well.
You as Nicholas the human or Nicholas the player?
Nicholas.
Nicholas.
Nicholas or Nicholas for citizens?
Nicholas. Me. Hello, me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what you said when we met you in game, too.
Okay. What do you guys think will be/happen at the Wombo Combo
the Zumba Wombo combo.
Well, Giles has already alerted us that there's going to be some form of eclipse. That can only mean bad things, right?
Well, then I hope we'll get those little glasses then when we get there.
Yeah. Oh, we don't burn our retinas out. Yeah.
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 Because that would suck having to do the rest of this thing.
All three of us blind? You know what? Our roles would be the same.
Have you seen Zombieland, the first one? That's what I imagined this as. Like the last scene in that carnival. That's what I missed.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a bunch of zombies in a carnival.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's all I'm really imagining. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Just a whole bunch of them in like these fairgrounds and stuff. And
It's somehow still operating despite of that. Course, but
there's electricity.
Electricity never stops.
This whole city area-ish.
Well, South Canada has adopted a certain province's hydro capabilities, right? So it must be pretty good. Must still be running pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course. Solar power.
I feel like the Zombo Wombo combo, I feel like it's going to be a bunch of survivors getting together, and there's going to be like zombie fights where like you bet on zombies fighting each other or something.
There's got to be a gladiatorial ring of some variety.
Like, or like the guy versus the lion coliseum stuff where you just put a dude in the ring and then make him fight like 10 zombies and see who wins.
Yeah, like Junko is going to end up in the pit, isn't he?
Whoa.
The question is, which side will he be on in the pit?
Ooh. It's true. This is the formative years.
He is a weakness to all, so.
I'm just hoping that whatever happens, there isn't some form of, like, cataclysm or overrun that happens because our mode of transportation is not particularly quick. So whatever happens, we got to be able to putter away from it.
Can we not walk faster than the car?
You can sprint.
Yeah.
Faster than the car, but you would have to like really run fast to keep pace. So okay. It's kind of like it's in between that 15 and 20 kilometers area where it's like you really have to be going to catch up with it.
Is that really right.
But
irritating
you could
speed?
For a short distance
that you're taking speed and you're like a slow zone
funeral procession speed
for long distance things it would be faster just because you wouldn't have to take as many breaks.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But for shorter distance, you could just sprint faster. I guess we also have to remember that there is our shovel-handed friend.
Shovel Ooh. Hands?
From the Church of Scientology. The other bad guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Shovel-handed? Old, where are you getting shovel-handed?
Well, he dug up the coffin, didn't he?
He's got really big claws. That
He's got shovels for hands.
Larger claws.
Pretty sure they're...
A claw for digging?
Pretty sure it's
also
shovel.
Known as a shovel.
Large metallic claws.
I could call them hoe hands, but I feel like that'd be a little...
No.
Yeah, so that was shovel hand. I felt like that was better.
Shovel hands.
Yeah.
Old shovel hands. Our arch enemy.
In his monologue, he said, "A display of the very worst the apocalypse has to offer. Pit against each other in a fight to the death. Spectate, bet, trade, win. All are welcome to the Zombo Wombo combo."
Definitely some gladiator stuff going on.
Taking place in Brick City, by the way.
I feel like we need to bring Necholas with us.
We might have to.
For tradesies.
For trades? You would just give them away?
Yeah, we're getting into the slaving game.
No one said slave.
Right.
Companion is the word we use.
Antiques.
You were all like, this guy's important. He was in the basement, cryogenically frozen. And now you're just going to give him away?
Well, you know what important things do is they sell for a high price normally.
That's true.
It might be the best way to get Nicholas acclimatized to our current, you know, world. Bring him
Show him the worst the apocalypse has to offer and against it.
Yeah, well, then he'll be prepared for it, right?
I mean, you've seen the worst.
We put him in the gladiator ring.
He could just be there when you get home so I don't have to play him the
There's
whole time.
No way he survives.
No, I feel like he's going to wander into the yard and get Roomba'd.
He's safer at Zombo Wombo combo than in that yard.
Hey, Nicholas is good inside.
Okay.
Yeah, but Nicholas is good with us at the Zombo Rombo combo.
I guess we could just move him around at gunpoint for the next foreseeable future.
Roughly 6 to 7 feet in front of us where the barrel ends.
Indeterminate how long that barrel is.
Okay, before this turns into more of a hostage situation, unless you guys have any specific questions
more?
For each other.
Yeah, and whose fault is that?
Guys, it has been so fun to do this with you. The first arc was really fun. It was unexpected for me. It was so much fun to create and to play. It's just fun to hang out and play make believe with you guys. I really appreciate it.
It's a great time.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for putting us all together.
Yeah, absolutely.
For those listening, you will be able to catch episode 5 coming up very soon. We will see what the journey to the Zombo Wombo combo looks like, and maybe even what it has in store.
Unlikely.
It's going to be like
this. It's going to be a good 3 episodes before we get there.
No, I will not allow it. We cannot do travel episodes.
What?
Not
this weekend.
Like, maybe one. Maybe.
It'll be like that scene from Brother Bear where the moose are riding on the mammoths and they're playing I Spy, you know? Spy. And something green.
Tell tree. Everyone we're on our way.
Tree.
I guess. Vertical log.
Tree.
Tree. A thing with leaves.
Tree.
Tree. And speaking of trees and leaving.
Let's make like one.
Oh, boys, thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Atocalypse.
Yeah.
The first iteration of it. I don't know if to call it episode 1 or like Atocalypse Tomorrow, season 1, arc 1, retrospective. I don't know.
That's a lot of names.
I see. That's a bad name. It's not good.
Ep 1. Episode 1.
Somehow.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. The talk back. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But
thanks for all the questions, too. Appreciate them.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Thank you all so much for any of you that sent in questions, especially you that sent it to the email, even though you didn't have to. It's very fun, and I appreciate it. It's a kind little gesture. And to those who we didn't even know about listening to the podcast, thank you. Super cool. We appreciate you so much. And maybe one day we'll have a Patreon.
Wild. Just a wild thought.
Step one, boys. Maybe one day we'll get there.
Step one, Patreon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next time on Atocalypse Tomorrow. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
There you go. That's how you do talk show.
Easy. Money.
Born for this.
Do I press stop or record?
Or pause?
Don't press pause.
Yeah,
press
I'm gonna,
stop.
I'm going to click record now, and we'll start.